Hello and welcome back to Technology Now, a weekly show from Hewlett-Packard Enterprise where we take what's happening in the world and explore how it's changing the way organizations are using technology. We're your hosts, Michael Bird
and Aubrey Lovell. And in this episode, we are revisiting a topic we looked at way, way back 70-something episodes ago and the pilot for this podcast. And we're going all the way back to the beginning, talking about how tech is helping predict and prepare us for extreme weather events. So great topic.
Yes, indeed, it is a great topic. Now, 2024 has already been a difficult year for extreme weather. The hurricane season on the eastern seaboard of North America is already one of the earliest active seasons on record. Meanwhile, in the Antarctic, researchers noted the most extreme heat wave ever recorded, with temperatures in July some 38.5 degrees Celsius, or 101 Fahrenheit, above the local yearly average, rising to a balmy minus 4 Celsius, or 24 Fahrenheit, in the middle of the southern winter. Oof.
That's pretty crazy. Well, if you're the kind of person who needs to know why what's going on in the world matters to your organization, this podcast is for you. And if you haven't yet, which hopefully you have after 70 plus episodes, subscribe to your podcast app of choice so you don't miss out on all the fun. All right, Michael, let's get into it.
Let's do it. Supercomputers and high-performance computing have been a key part of weather prediction since the 1950s, when a basic US government-operated computer used a simple barometer and pressure readings to make localized weather predictions at an Air Force base in Massachusetts. Since then, things have moved on a little. In the UK, the UK Met Office HPC solution, built by Cray in 2016, reads and computes over 215 billion weather observations every day via 24 petabytes of memory and 460,000 computer cores, with the aim of creating over £2 billion, or $2.6 billion, of socio-economic benefit in its lifetime through extreme weather and climate hazard prediction. And we've linked to that in the show notes.
And it probably won't have any trouble making that return on investment. According to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration in the U.S., as of August 8th, 2024, has already seen 19 weather events cause damage, upwards of $1 billion, with 149 people that have sadly lost their lives. And that's in the U.S. alone, and we've actually linked that in the show notes as well. Now, Michael, as you know, this one obviously hits really close to home for me. And, yeah, you know, last week I wasn't able to record because we actually had a hurricane impact Florida. And this actually, for special dramatic effect this time, we had a lightning strike hit near our house. And the current from that lightning strike actually took out all of our living room household electronics. And we had two safety breakers and a fuse box. So for it to go through all of that and cause this ruckus in our home was pretty interesting. So that's what we're talking about today, is really that devastating impact of extreme weather on our societies and how HPC solutions can help us stay on top of that ever-increasing changing climate. So joining us today is Eileen Carpenter, Earth Sciences Segment Manager at Hewlett-Packard Enterprise. Eileen, welcome to the show. So Eileen, how has the use of supercomputers in weather prediction and climate prediction changed over time?
So every 5 to 10 years, the big national weather services will buy new supercomputers to run their models. Bigger systems let them run models with finer granularity so they can resolve features that they couldn't resolve on their older, less capable computers, and they can make better predictions as a result. And I actually left this kind of job for 9 years and then came back to it. So we used to have what was called a deterministic forecast. You'd run one model and you'd say, this is what we think is going to happen. Now they run 50 slightly different models and they say, well, you know, there's a 40% chance that this is going to happen, or there's only a 2% chance that this is going to happen, but it's so bad that we'd better keep our eye on it because the impact would be huge if it did happen. And so the rise of probabilistic forecasting in the last decade has been really significant. And everybody buys as much computing capability as their budget permits because there's such a strong correlation between the amount of computing capability they have and their ability to make accurate predictions.
So when you talk about granularity, does that mean we're getting into more localized weather forecasting? Or is it just like a case of now we can go minute by minute instead of hour by hour? Or is it a case of being able to predict further ahead with more accuracy?
So it's mainly the former, but it's not really, can you make a forecast for a particular town versus a county level? It's within the model, the numerical model of the atmosphere. How far apart are the grid points on which you compute things like temperature and wind speed and humidity? You know, 10 years ago, those grid points might have been 20 kilometers apart. And now they might be 10 kilometers or 2 kilometers apart. And so the level of detail in the model is increased. And that gives you better predictions about what's going to happen throughout the whole area being modeled, as well as giving you more data, you know, closer to where people live, right? If your model only had grid points that were 100 kilometers apart, you wouldn't have mountain ranges that we know affect weather. You can't represent clouds because the size of a cloud is smaller than the spacing between two grid points. If your grid points are very close together, then you can resolve clouds. And clouds have such a huge impact on weather. So there's lots of reasons why you need a lot of resolution in order to give people useful information.
We're obviously seeing weather patterns and climate patterns evolve very quickly. Can HPC solutions help us predict these new and unknown weather conditions?
There are certain things that have improved quite a bit in recent years. So hurricane track. Where is it going to go? Intensity, however, is harder. And we see some rapidly intensifying hurricanes that it's very hard to predict when something's going to go from like a category 1 to a category 5 in 24 hours. So there's a whole spectrum between a short-range weather forecast, what's called a medium-range weather forecast, a monthly, what's going to happen next month or next fall, next winter, so seasonal forecasts. What's going to happen next year? What's going to happen in 10 years? What's going to happen in a century? So there's a whole spectrum of different models where different things are included in different ways. If you need to make predictions about what's going to happen in sort of this seasonal time frame, it's actually very, very difficult. The state of the art is that this is still very hard. And then we have to make a distinction between the sort of outlooks that the Weather Service gives about, well, it'll probably be cooler and drier next winter versus a prediction of exactly what's going to happen. The state of the science is that we know some big trends, but getting very specific is very difficult.
Is the bigger challenge here looking ahead or being more accurate? And how do we improve on those with HPC?
So looking ahead, the longer you look, I think, is harder. Observations are probably the biggest piece about being more accurate. So if you have a better understanding of exactly what the atmosphere is doing right now, it's been shown that you will get a better forecast out of that because that's where your model starts from. And so the process of incorporating observations into the model state, which is data assimilation, is just critical. It's improvements in that part of the forecast process that have led the European Center to having very good accuracy in their medium range forecasts. The other thing, though, that's changing is AI. The AI revolution has just exploded in terms of weather prediction. And there are models to go from observations to predictions. We call that nowcasting. And there are lots of different ways of using AI within the traditional physics-based modeling systems, as well as new entirely AI-based models. So there's a huge amount of work that's being done. And on some things, these models do as well or better than the traditional models. And in some things, they do worse. And so it's a research problem right now. And a lot of effort is being put in here to understand the strengths and weaknesses and improve the ability of machine learning models. But the rate of progress is amazing. Whereas with the traditional physics-based models, the numerical weather prediction models, they've seen about 1 day of improved forecast skill per decade. So in that decade, you get you have more science, you have better models, you have a bigger computer, you can run it at higher resolution, or you can, you know, do other things better. But you go from, you know, the accuracy of a 5-day forecast is as good as a 4-day forecast was 10 years ago. That's very slow progress. So the rate of improvement in the machine learning models is enormous. They could be better for making predictions, you know, in a few years or, you know, in a decade.
So you mentioned hurricane prediction. Can you give us any case studies of ways that HPC solutions are being used to mitigate or predict extreme weather or its impact on humans?
One of the missions for the National Weather Services around the world is to issue watches and warnings for severe weather events. And they do that to protect lives and property. So when you know that a severe storm is coming, you're going to move infrastructure out of the way if you can, move airplanes, move ships out of ports, evacuate citizens. You may not be able to protect all your built infrastructure because you can't move it, but you can do things to mitigate damage, and you can certainly do things to mitigate loss of lives. And the predictions that go into a Weather Service issuing a warning come from a variety of sources, including the models that run on HPC systems. So these weather services have access to both the models they run themselves and the models that other their peer institutions run. And they collect all of that data. There's a lot of sharing in the meteorological community. And using all of the information they have, they try to make a decision, you know, are we going to evacuate this city? There's a big effort in the developing world through the World Meteorological Organization for severe weather warnings for everyone. Because in many cases, it's in the global south, it's been difficult to have access to the right information to protect citizens and property.
So, Aline, you mentioned collaboration there. Is there much of an open science community around weather forecasting?
Yes. The World Meteorological Organization coordinates the sharing of data in the community, and they actually developed standards and ways to do that before the internet existed. Because if you're going to run a global forecast model, you need data from all over the world. And so it started out as a very, very collaborative area. And a lot of the data is free and openly available. And there's a trend towards more of the data that used to be closed becoming open. So that has led to a huge amount of innovation in the private sector, because they're able to build upon the data that the public sector is developing and providing.
Thanks so much, Aline. This has really been an interesting and amazing conversation, and we appreciate your time. Okay, now it's time for Today I Learned, the part of the show where we take a look at something happening in the world we think you should know about. Michael, what do we have this week?
Well, this week, Aubrey, I want to talk to you about a quantum leap forward in atomic navigation technologies, which could eventually replace GPS systems. Now, the technology is known as atom interferometry. I'll just say that again, atom interferometry, or more commonly, a quantum compass. Now, the system works by using lasers and quantum mathematics to infer the movement and position of an object to fractions of a millimeter. For reference, it's around 1,000 times more accurate than an aircraft GPS, which in turn is around 1,000 times more accurate than the GPS in your phone. Now, the main benefit of quantum compasses is that they don't need to pick up data from satellites, which means they can't be hacked or scrambled, and they work just as well underground or underwater as on the surface. Wow. Now, the downside is that they are massive, being made up of 6 room-sized collections of equipment. But researchers in the US have been working hard to miniaturize the tech, with some amazing findings announced. Most strikingly, they've created something called a high-performance silicon photonic modulator, whatever that is, on a single chip. Until now, each of these has been the size of a refrigerator. 4 of them go into each system, but more importantly, these devices traditionally create a lot of unwanted light noise. putting them onto a chip has seen a 100,000-fold reduction in that, which means a whole lot less other equipment is needed too. Okay, this sounds like a lot, but what it means in essence is that these systems have now gone from building size to room size in one go, which has opened up opportunities to make everything smaller still until eventually it becomes portable and therefore cheap. Now that is pretty cool, isn't it?
It is pretty cool, very fascinating, and definitely above my pay grade of trying to figure that out. But well done. And thanks, Michael. That was a great story. All right. Well, it's time to return to our guest, Eileen Carpenter, to talk about HPC and, of course, weather prediction. So what's exciting you at the moment about the field? What are you looking at and thinking, wow, this is amazing?
The AI, the development of machine learning models for weather prediction. There are several of them and new ones keep coming out and it's almost impossible to keep up with the literature. There's a new neural GCM model. A GCM is a general circulation model that the article was published in Science June 15th. Still trying to digest that. It's a new way of doing things. It's very innovative. It was developed in a collaboration between one of the hyperscalers and one of the leading weather centers. So it's got very smart data science folks, as well as folks with deep knowledge about operational weather prediction. And so I'm excited about the collaboration we're seeing between the big tech companies and some of the weather services and the rate at which they're innovating.
So finally, Eileen, and we ask this to all of our guests, why should listeners to the podcast be paying attention to the field of HPC and weather prediction?
Everyone is affected by the weather, and the extremes we're seeing now keep coming at us. The rate of rainfall that we've seen in the last couple of years in places all around the world and the floods that that's causing, the fires that we're seeing in places with droughts, often rapidly changing to a flood situation on a burn scar. People are being affected by these things. And the ingredients for the predictions that people get on the app on their phone or the warnings they get from their government come from models that run on high-performance computing systems. And the innovation in computing and the ability to run computer models faster translates directly into the ability to have better predictions and to have more lead time so that you can take action to protect yourself and protect property. And I'd say the other area is the science isn't done. And that needs high-performance computing systems. And so in academia and in the public sector, there's a huge amount of research in modeling, in having a better understanding about how the Earth system works and how things interact, what feedbacks are there. Really important for climate prediction. And all of that strongly depends on having HPC systems to run really detailed, expensive models on.
Thanks so much, Eileen. It's been wonderful to talk to you. And you can find more on the topics discussed in today's episode in our show notes.
Right, we are getting towards the end of the show, which means it is time for This Week in History, a look at monumental events in the world of business and technology, which has changed our lives. Now, Aubrey, can you remind me, what was last week's clue?
So the clue last week was, it's 1992, and this mission endeavored to be full of firsts.
Oh, yes. And you were very confident that you knew what the answer was. Did you get it right?
I actually did. It was, of course, the launch of STS-47, the 50th mission in NASA's space shuttle program, which saw the shuttle Endeavour take off to conduct life sciences and materials experiments in orbit. Now, the mission was notable for a few firsts. Probably most importantly, the mission saw Mae Jemison become the first African-American woman in space as Mission Specialist 4, whose experiments largely revolved around psychological training against motion sickness and anxiety. And the flight also featured the first astronaut of the Japanese space program, program, Mamoru Mori, and the first married couple in space, Mark C. Lee and Jan Davies, who had secretly married before the mission and only announced it to NASA once it was too late to swap them out. That's hilarious. And at the time, NASA had an unwritten rule that married couples couldn't fly together. After the mission, it became a written rule. What a fascinating group of people.
Absolutely. Thank you, Aubrey. Right. The clue for next week is from 1986, stealing has been against our code of conduct.
That's an interesting one. That brings us to the end of Technology Now for this week. Thank you so much to our guest, Eileen Carpenter, Earth Sciences Segment Manager at Hewlett-Packard Enterprise. And to you, our listeners, thank you so much for joining us.
Technology Now is hosted by Aubrey Lovell and myself, Michael Bird. And this episode was produced by Sam Datapoulin, with production support from Harry Morton, Zoe Anderson, Alicia Kempson-Taylor, Alison Paisley, Alyssa Mitri, and Camilla Patel.
Our social editorial team is Rebecca Wissinger, Judy Ann Goldman, Katie Guarino, and our social media designers are Alejandra Garcia, Carlos Alberto Suarez, and Ambar Maldonado.
Technology Now is a Lower Street production for Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, and we'll see you at the same time, the same place, next week. Cheers!